Hi, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, July the 11th, 1996. In the fireside room this evening, we're going to be listening in on a Holden forum. Tonight's topic, Bye-Bye, Crossing Between Deaf and Hearing Worlds. Let's listen in.
And then move into hearing from the people on the panel. And let both Autumn and others come as they come. My name is Chris Sharon. I'm an assistant for the teaching staff, coordinating and program coordinating. And I'll be moderating the forum tonight. So a part of my role is to give some introductory comments about what forums are at Holden and how things will go. To start with, I wanted to thank you all for coming. We just had a spectacular worship. I felt a really moving service. And so it feels right to come over here and talk some about how we can build bridges between deaf worlds and hearing worlds. And that's the topic that we'll try to talk about tonight. But at the outset of forums, we always throw in the caveat that we won't solve all the issues. We hope that our discussion will raise questions and give us avenues to follow up later on after our forum tonight. And I hope that the conversation will continue after our hour that we spend together. I wanted to particularly encourage people, after we have the introductory remarks from each person, to raise your hand and wait to be called upon so that we can make sure that there's interpreting going back and forth and that people aren't just in their enthusiasm saying what they're thinking. Also, please wait until the interpreter has finished interpreting before you respond to something that was said to make sure that the interpreter hears or has time to move on to the next person who's going to be speaking. A brief introduction to the topic. Bye-bye, I learned, is a kind of a shorthand term that the deaf culture uses to talk about this question of living with two languages and living in two cultures. And various people who are here this week live in various amounts in those two worlds. Some people, Jeannie is an interpreter. She's hearing, and she has one or two daughters who are deaf. And so she's constantly negotiating these boundaries, both in her own home and in her work. And I think for all of our panelists in different ways, that question is real important. How does that happen, that you live in one or the other culture, or in both at the same time? We also thought it would be helpful for us as a Christian community, mostly hearing, to think about how we might be inclusive, how we might try and be better welcoming people in our home congregations or wherever we come from. So by asking these questions, maybe we can make some progress in being more comfortable in deaf culture and learning more how to cross those divides. So we have Autumn here with her ice cream. And I think what we'll do is have each person speak for 4 or 5 minutes about some of their reflections about the topic to get us started. And I'd ask them to introduce themselves and a little bit about their circumstances relating to the topic, and then to talk. And we could just start with Jeannie, or if you have a particular order that you think would be helpful, then we can do that.
Okay, my name is Beth Fernhaber Lockhart. I was born hearing and into an all-hearing family, and at age 6 and a half, I was hit with spinal meningitis and became completely deaf overnight. I was put into a regular school system, an oral program, where mainly we were supposed to learn to speak and lip read. that was in California. Then I moved to Washington State. And again, I was put in a deaf program in a public school system, mainstreamed, and was mainstreamed all the way through high school. And then I went to Concordia Lutheran College in Portland, Oregon. I was the only deaf student in the college, and we had interpreters. I had a BA in elementary education, and then I went to Western Maryland College. It was also a hearing college, but they had a deaf program there. And they had, I would say, maybe 50 or 60 students there, some more during the summer. I got my master's in deaf education. At that time, when I was growing up, around junior high school, is when I started to pick up signing from my deaf friends. And I was slowly starting to become part of the deaf community, picking up a little bit of the culture and the language at that time. After graduate school, I started working as a parish assistant for a deaf Lutheran church in Philadelphia. And I worked there for 5 years. I was involved with teaching religious education to all the students at two deaf schools, one in New Jersey and one in Philadelphia. I left my church job and I taught for a few years at the Pennsylvania School for the Deaf. I met my husband, who is hearing. We married and we have two children. Both children are hearing, and they're here with us this week. Their first language is really American Sign Language, and their second language is English. I'm very involved with a variety of work. I do a lot of community service work, social work. I'm in and out of different places like court, hospitals, classrooms, you know, the whole mental health, a wide variety of work with working with both cultures, hearing and deaf, giving direct services to deaf and hard of hearing people, and training, sensitivity, and workshops to hearing people. I teach American Sign Language classes and deaf culture classes and deaf adult literacy classes. I also am working part-time at an ELCA deaf church, and I'm going into the seminary this fall. And I'm also working with the National Council of Churches Deaf Ministries Committee, which brings in a lot of denominations and their deaf ministries, helping them making their worship services and deaf service programs more equivalent for deaf and hard of hearing people. So that's really a summary of me.
My name is Bob Radke from Chicago. I was born hard of hearing, have a moderate to severe loss. I need a hearing aid. It's pretty powerful. It's not on the ear. It's behind the ear because it's more powerful that way. My parents didn't know that I was hard of hearing until I was 5 years old. They thought I was ignoring them for the first 5 years. Of course, I still ignore them. I went to a special school for deaf and hard of hearing kids, and they separated the hard of hearing kids in one classroom and the deaf kids were in the other classroom. We were not allowed to use sign language. The teacher caught us, they would use a ruler and slap us on the wrist and make sure that we knew it was a terrible thing to do. Then I graduated in high school. That was my first experience of mainstreaming. If I struggle, I had a special teacher that I can fall back on, and that the teacher was helping me, and a lot of help that I got. It was difficult maintaining. I was in the front row, so it wasn't always easy to catch the delivery reading or to hear everything that was going on, especially when the students were in the background and they were talking and giving responses, and I always missed that, so I didn't know what was the right answer, and I was always too embarrassed to ask the teacher to repeat the answer, so I just kind of kept quiet, didn't say anything, didn't want to make trouble. Then I went to our college, same thing. Actually, it was really worse in college. In college, it was big. I went to a big college. Big mistake on my part. And a big auditorium, a lot of kids, and the PA system was not good. The echo was just bouncing off the wall, and I was getting nothing. But I made friends, people who kept notes. I asked them if I could copy their notes, and they were good enough to let me follow their notes. Didn't always work, because some people were lousy note taker, or I couldn't read their handwriting, didn't know what that was. But I struggled and made it through college. It was not the best part of my life. I was really struggling and wanting to go home many, many, many times. And then I graduated, got my degree, Bachelor of Science in Accounting. And right now I work for the state of Illinois as an auditor. Doing pretty good. Recently they pulled me out of the field work because we were dealing with different type of people now. We're dealing with a lot of people that are Arabs. Very difficult for me to understand. A lot of foreigners now own businesses, and it became very difficult. So they found that I had another talent with computer, and so now I develop a lot of program with the computer and do a lot of computer work. And I also coordinate some program for collection. We have a coordination with the city of Chicago that we do different things. You can't get your city license until you pay the state of Illinois toll, then we'll let you go to the city hall and get your business license. So we do a lot of different things like that. I'm currently president of an organization called HAND, which is an advocacy group for deaf and hard of hearing, and we fight all the time. We struggle, we fight with politicians, and try to improve the life of a deaf person. Recently, we were working on a commission for deaf and hard of hearing. We're almost there. We're hoping to be successful on that. I work very, very involved with the church. We have deaf ministry at my church. I also want to say a little bit about my social life. I noticed that when I was going to college, I had some hearing girlfriends and some deaf or hard of hearing girlfriend, and I kind of flipped back and forth for a while, but then it always seemed that I had enjoyed being with deaf people more, but I didn't realize until much later in life that I really, there was kind of like a reason why I was more comfortable with the deaf and hard of hearing world, but I didn't find my true identity until maybe when I was, until I married or met Anne. Then after that, I started realizing why it was so difficult for me to date with a hearing woman. I think about all I should say now.
Okay. Because I speak better in my first language, which is English, I'm going to rely on an interpreter for my second language, which is American Sign Language. Growing up, I had a deaf grandmother, although during the time my grandmother was growing up, it wasn't okay to sign. It was something to be ashamed of and was not recommended. So my mother, as a result of that, was never taught the sign language that we have learned as a result of my daughters being deaf. So the only thing I knew as a child was the alphabet. which I used a lot during school and wanting to cheat on tests, and the answer is number one is A. So that was something that we played with. I never thought of it being a real language until after my daughters were born. And it wasn't until 14 months old that we realized that they were both deaf. And how we realized that, even though they are profoundly deaf, we used to just think that because they were twins, that they were in deep thought amongst themselves. And so we would say their name once, and they wouldn't respond. We'd say their name twice, and then we'd get mad, and we'd stomp on the floor and say their name a third time, and they would look at us. So we thought up until then that there was anything wrong. And it was just before Christmas, right after their first birthday, that my mother had bought them a little toy, and it's in the shape of a little bird. You push on the little numbers, and each number makes a different sound. And it's in the really high pitch range. And my mother brought it into the house and went up behind my daughters and sounded it off, thinking that they were going to jump, and they didn't move. Everybody else in the house jumped, because it is such a high-pitched sound. And so at that time, we started to think that they did have a problem with hearing, and so we took them into St. Peter's Hospital, Mary Bridge Hospital in Tacoma, which specializes in children, and then they have their own audiologist and testing equipment to find out on young babies if they could be tested. Prior to that, before we found out that the hospital was available, we'd gone to our own doctor, and we had told him that we thought the girls were deaf and how we could test them. And he said there was no test for our little children that were that age, because they didn't know how to sit still and raise their hand when a sound was made. So finally we found that there was a way to sit a child at a table and play games and then have someone come up behind them, as my mother did, and make noises and see if they respond. Well, the second step to finding out how deaf they really were was to take them back and have little sticky things put on their head, and then them go to sleep and measure the brain activity, when they did high-pitched sounds, which can only be done with high-pitched sounds. And that proved to us that Min and Jamie both were severe and profoundly deaf. So immediately we went and saw an audiologist and had them fitted for hearing aids. And after about 4 years of frustration of them pulling the hearing aids off and on and off and on, and not much improvement on their speech, we decided that we needed to focus on something that we knew they would be successful at. And that was sign language. And so we started, sign language began before the 4 years, actually. After we found out they were deaf, we did purchase a sign language book and started to teach them. But still today, professionals are not aware that there are avenues you can go to and places that you can receive services for children that are deaf, such as the deaf community and different organizations around that can tell you what your options are having deaf children. So for my daughters, they were frustrated and didn't have that opportunity that hearing children have with hearing parents to acquire language. They had to be taught in an unnatural way. And so still today, ASL, even though it's not pure ASL, because I am not deaf, and my mother and my husband and nobody in our family is deaf, and we couldn't teach it to them naturally just by communicating, we taught it to them as we learned it. And so their first language is the best ASL we could give them, and their second language is English, but it's not spoken. And that right now is a trial for us too, teaching them how to read and write, because children who acquire language at an early age seem to have a better time reading and writing, especially when their first language is English. Amanda and Jamie, up till last year, were mainstreamed in the public schools. And as the trend in teaching was to have multi-age classrooms and open up the walls in between the classrooms and have 60 and 70 kids doing all these movements, the more we found Amanda and Jamie were not being served properly in a public school, so we made a transition and with their agreement decided to move them to Vancouver School for the Deaf, which is where they are currently attending. And they live in the dorm during the week and come home on the weekends. And I go down once, twice, depending on schedule and what activities they're involved in during the week, and visit them.
My name is Autumn. My last name is Chandler. I was born 1981, hearing. In about 2 months, my mom just suspects that, you know, because I was not responding. And so she took me to the doctor, and she said, oh, she's just fine, you know, it's okay. And then she went to another doctor, and the same thing happened again. And went to another doctor, same thing happened again. And finally, at about 10 months old, the doctor said, yep, she's losing her hearing. And she's hard of hearing. And they tried to be oral with me at first, because that was, at that time, we were living in Germany, and in Frankfurt, Germany. And they recommended there oralism, or German Sign Language. And, you know, we didn't want that. So they tried oralism, and I refused. I wouldn't respond to them, nothing. Nothing would talk to me. Fine. So my mom would drive about an hour just for sign language classes, you know, English sign language classes. And then she'd come back and she'd teach me, you know, she'd say, like, ball. And I went, ball, and I signed it. And then I said with my voice, and I said, ball, with my voice at the same time. And wow, and I proceeded from there, and I just continued to pick it up, you know, really fast from there on. I learned sign language very easily. I grew up. My mom and dad, they both sign. My dad has a harder time going to the classes because he was in the military. But now, you know, right now, my dad is taking classes for sign language because he is becoming a teacher for the deaf. The science teacher, you know, to teach kids. I was growing up, and I was in the public elementary school. Through fourth grade, I transferred to the deaf school, at Washington School for the Deaf. And I've been going there ever since, till about ninth grade. And then I liked Washington School for the Deaf because, you know, there's lots of sign going on and lots of social activities. It was really cool. Ninth grade, I said, I'm kind of curious. I want to try mainstream again. So I went over to Cleveland High School in Portland. And I went there into a mainstream program. Just, you know, I fell in love with it. I have an interpreter, and she shows up, and, you know, and she's kind of an assistant also. She helps me, and if I don't understand something, you know, I can ask the interpreter, and, you know, she'll sign and explain what it means to me. And sometimes she'll help. The interpreter's not like, you know, just, she's not just a friend with all students. I have hearing friends. I have deaf friends. Mostly deaf, though. Because, you know, in the area that I live, the hearing kids, you know, all very young. So I just, forget them. But many deaf friends. I have a hearing boyfriend. And I go and take ice skating classes. And I have, Jelena is my interpreter for me. And she goes and takes classes with me at the same time. And now I'm at freestyle level 3 as an ice skater. My coach, she understands, I can lip read her a little bit. I can catch what she's saying most of the time. I can read, and I can kind of understand when I'm skating. There's a little bit of a problem with the music because some sounds as if I can't hear, like really soft music, really fast, you know, drums or something, I can't hear it, I just get really confused. I have to have very straight music and I can hear. And this August, I'm going to have two programs, performances, for Seattle for the ISI Championship. And I have a deaf brother. He will be 11, July 22nd. And my parents both sign. And I'm happy to have parents that have signed and not have these few old parents.
Thanks to all of you for sharing. And I think at this point, we'll see if anyone has... You want to come over here? We'll see if anyone has questions and just go from there.
Okay. This has been very fascinating to watch, but the whole week I've been wondering what it is they are saying with their mouths, because it doesn't fit with what else is going on, and I'm wondering what is it they're actually doing with their mouths? Like when he's, you know, it looks like he's saying something all really different.
Often we use not English, but being a different language, American Sign Language, ASL, you've heard that term all week. It's its own language, you know, very visual, and has its own syntax, its own grammar, its own idioms, and so forth. And oftentimes we're signing, but we might mouth few words here and there, not English-wise, or we might be using a different, something called PSE, which is sort of a mix of ASL and kind of English word order. And I'm pretty much doing that now. Let me give you an example of ASL, what it looks like. If I was to sign something English, it might look like this. The cat climbed up the tree. That's a signed English phrase. Now in ASL, so it's almost like if you drew a picture of that sentence, you'd probably draw the tree first and then put the cat on it. Well, in a sense, that's what ASL does. So it's really impossible to speak English and sign ASL at the same time. So what we're using mostly is you're seeing sort of a PSE in this panel tonight by some of us.
Yeah, I just want to say that, well, I really say all the time, my wife and I think even Dustin say that they don't like when I use my voice, because it's hard for them to understand my sign, and my voice somehow always seem to go together. It's just not a natural way of talking, signing, and using the voice at the same time. I'm using my voice today just to let you know that I can talk and I am hard of hearing, but it's just most of the time when I sign, I, you know, shut off my voice.
Thank you.
Please.
Is sign language very hard to learn?
Yes.
You've done it.
I started taking sign language classes when the girls were first diagnosed, and that was at 14 months old, and they're going to be 12 the end of August. I graduated from an interpreter training program, which was a 3-year college program, and I still haven't stopped learning. It's something that when you meet people that are from halfway across the United States, mm-hmm. they have different signs than what we have here. Mm-hmm. And so you're always expanding and you're always growing from people that you meet.
Thank you.
Basic sign language, you know, depending on the person, it's not difficult And if you practice it, you know, you get better and you retain that, you remember that stuff. But I think what she's talking about is the deaf language. ASL is very, 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 very difficult because basic sign language, you're just taking your English word and just translating the sign language. But that's not the language that the deaf use. So if you really want to use the deaf language, then it's just really, really difficult. It takes a lot of years of practice.
I teach ASL, and that question always comes up. How long will it take me to learn ASL? And it really depends on individuals. Some people have, you know, a better visual memory, you know, and they can do better at ASL. And other people, no matter how hard they try, they just cannot pick it up. You know, so like Bob said, it depends on how involved you are, you know, whether or not you get involved with the deaf community, how often you use it, because ASL is like any other language. You know, you're constantly learning, it's constantly growing, and you have to keep up with it. I would have to say that many of our teachers in schools have minimal level skills. Therefore, the kids don't understand the students as well as they could. And the students can't really learn very much from the teachers because the teachers have minimal levels. That's not all teachers, but many. And that's been my experience through my life. And that obviously limits deaf education.
Yes, please.
Before the sign language became accepted, I mean, I'm really appalled to hear that people were not allowed to use sign language. I just can't believe it, you know. Well, how were they supposed to communicate? And how did they, actually?
A long time ago, people were oral. Same thing.
A long time ago,
you know, the schools would have, you know, these little rulers, and they'd, you know, hit the kids' hands and stuff, and if they were using their sign language, most of them were using oral, or I assume, you know, they were writing messages back and forth if they had paper or something.
I need sign language mostly for receptive, you know, system for me to understand what other people are saying. Obviously, I don't need sign language to communicate with hearing people because I have my voice, but I do need it for the receptive.
Before sign language was accepted, it really became bathroom talk. Kids would go in the bathroom and they talk, and then they'd come back out in the classroom. Or it became dorm talk. In residential schools for the deaf during the day, they'd be practiced with oral methods, and as soon as they get out of the classroom, they would sign with each other. You know, or the ball field or whatever. Yeah. Deaf people have always found a way to gesture, make up signs, you know, or anything they could to communicate until sign language was more formally accepted.
Yeah, I just want to add that most of my friends in school were hard of hearing. In the playground, we had divided the deaf group associated with themselves, and the hard of hearing kids kind of broke out to their little group. And so they were using their voice, talking loudly so that we all can hear. They all understood that we needed to talk loud. So that all, you know, that also helped me.
Please.
Yeah, I think I have what is the basic question. I have no friends or acquaintances who are hard of hearing or deaf. My only exposure has been with some interpreters our choir uses. And in some cases, I place great stock on etiquette and politeness. But on the other hand, if I happen to run into a community or an individual or group of people who are hard of hearing or deaf, how would I, as somebody who doesn't sign and doesn't understand the culture, how would I behave such that those other people there feel more comfortable? I already know I would feel uncomfortable because I would feel kind of at a lack of how to communicate. But for people like me, how would you prefer I interact?
Pen and paper, you know, smile. If you're talking one-on-one, many of us can catch, you know, some of the words, you know, acting out, you know, that helps. That's a good beginning. But paper and pencil always helps.
They say, I don't know if it's true or not, but the best lip reader in the world can catch about 50% of the word. Is that what you heard? Something like that? 25%? Really? Okay, even less than I thought. So when she said that they're reading lip, if they catch a word, then that's, you know, one of the many words that they're catching but missing a lot. It's not true that, you know, people can lip read their whole life and survive. It doesn't happen.
Yeah, I would add to that comment. The best lip reading people are hearing college students. There's only about 25 to 30% of the sounds that are made are even visible on the lips. I'm not talking words, I'm talking sounds. M's, K's, most of the words, or most of the sounds, are actually in the nose of the throat. And those are ones that you can't see. So lip reading is a big guessing game. If you're hard of hearing, and so you have some auditory assistance, you're lip reading, that's in the best situations you can catch more. But it's a very difficult. That's something people, hearing people also ask all the time, do you lip read? And I always say no. Even though I can lip read that sentence.
There's a lot of words that have the same mouth movement, exact same mouth movement, five, high, you know, just which word are you talking about? And then the other problem with lip reading, person might say the boy is not going to the store, and I think he said the boy is going to the store because I missed that one lousy word. And that's part of being hard of hearing too. You miss that one word and you change the whole meaning of the sentence.
I remember hearing a long time ago that people with foreign accents are harder to lip read because they form their words differently. I wonder if that is true. Also about men with facial hair like beards and mustaches, is that also harder to lip read?
Yes.
Yes to both of them? Okay.
People that stutter, people that mumble, people that have thin lips, people that don't move them very well, bright red lipstick, you know, the list goes on and on and on.
They have a pipe in there, they're talking out of one mouth, you know, with pipes.
Also, you know, you have to think about background noise in a room. Air conditioners, fans, TVs, radios, whatever. You know, I can't hear any of it myself, but I know that that influences, mm-hmm. you know, anyone who's trying to listen, especially hard of hearing people.
I don't know if it's because my grandmother was born hearing and was possibly deaf later on in age, but I was told by several different deaf people that she's amazing lip reader. And that often when they go out with her and they go on their senior citizens trips, that she would interpret for them because she could lip read so well. Mm. And so I'm wondering if that's true. Maybe Beth could answer that, things that she was born hearing, or if that's not true.
Born hearing what?
Can lip read better than people who are born deaf and have never spoken before?
Oh, I think so. Sure, if you have a strong English base before you become deaf, then that definitely helps because you're guessing with more background about what's going on. If you were, you know, prelingually deaf, you know, you're in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you have a question.
I noticed in the Narnia today that her little son does sign language very well. Was it difficult? Beth. Was it difficult to teach him? That's what I was wondering. The little one.
No.
No?
Actually, we started signing with our kids the minute they were born. And my oldest son, who's 7 now, his first signs were really at 7 months old. Milk. And this boy in front, at 9 months old, with two-word sentence. You know, so it's just natural signing and they pick it up. Both did not start speaking until almost past 2. So it's really their second language.
Thank you.
They say the sign language is a lot easier for babies to learn than speech because it's very difficult to use your speech where it's easy to see some hand movement and catch that. So it's relatively easy.
It's easier to express sign language. You know, you can understand English and sign, but you can certainly express sign much easier.
Yeah, Christine back here.
Long time ago, about 10 years ago, my daughter, when she was pretty small, she was kind of a baby, I'd say about 8 months old, you know, there's a boy who was hearing, and he was picking up sign language. He was picking up sign language. The boy was picking up sign language. Later, his brother was born, and he was picking up sign language. So they were both hearing, but they were picking up sign language even at that young age. A few years later, baby was 2 had a both sisters were also picking up sign language. The whole hearing family was at that young age were picking up sign language. Both were hearing. So I feel like hearing babies we're picking up sign language really easily. Mm-hmm. I feel that speaking is more difficult at that age. Mm. They can learn just talk later, but I don't know.
Interesting.
One of the questions I have has to do with your experiences in churches. And I've been in a lot of churches. I went through seminary training and hope to be a pastor in the church, and I've been in a lot of congregations, and only one that I've been in, it was in Wilmington, Delaware, outside Philadelphia, had a deaf ministry with an interpreter for worship services. And so one of the questions that I struggle with as a person who's concerned about the church and its welcome of all people, and as a pastor, I'm concerned about what kinds of things you've experienced and that churches can do to make a community open to deaf and hard of hearing people. And I know that there's a debate between together deaf and hard of hearing folks and being able to be more relaxed and not have to balance between hearing and deaf culture. But there's also something really powerful about an integrated group of people together. And so I just wondered if you would speak to that in your experiences with churches.
The powerfulness of integrated service is for mostly for hearing people.
Yeah.
And for the deaf, it's their only option, so they just sit there and, you know, they want to be part of the church and there's, you know, no other place to go to, so they just sit there patiently and try it. I think they just sit there hoping that, you know, God will see that, you know, good person, you're doing what you're supposed to do. You know? Not really, you know, getting a lot out of church. The other thing is, it is nice to have integrated church service because it helps financially. I guess that would be one of the biggest reasons that having an all-deaf church is difficult because of the money problem. So the integrated church service would give you more financial support. Kind of a lousy reason.
Yeah, it's my turn. Can I talk? Before, when I lived in Fort Lewis, we'd drive to Seattle because they had a deaf and hearing church. The pastor signed and talked at the same time. And I liked that, you know, but they stopped it and we moved down to Vancouver. And then we went to church, and oh, it was okay. There's an interpreter, and the person who preached signed. I don't know what he was saying, though. But, you know, when I'd use the interpreter, I just get sick of it. I didn't like it. It was really boring just to sit there, oh, la, la, la. You know, but now, my parents, you know, they gave up going because going to church, you know, it was really too frustrating for us. And there's no deaf church. Mm-hmm. And I haven't been to church regularly since, four years now. And just recently, when I was living with Jalene, you know, we were going to Cleveland High School, I went to a church youth group. And I got kind of frustrated because there was no interpreter. And, you know, communicating most of the time, I was having to ride and ride and ride. And sometimes, you know, it made me really bored and I just want to take off and go home early. So.
I think you see that there are very frustrating stories, and that's very common for deaf and hard of hearing people. Deaf people, on the other hand, really need an interpreter to function. But, as you heard, it's not the best option. You know, you end up being very passive in church. You don't really feel part of what's going on. You feel very limited, and the information you get is very limited. I'm not sure what the best solution is, but if you notice, deaf and hard of hearing people that do come to church, ask them what they want, what would help them, what would, you know, what do their friends want? And the best way to pull deaf and hard of hearing people into church is through other deaf and hard of hearing people. We started in our town. I used to drive about an hour and 15 minutes into Philadelphia to go to a deaf church, back and forth, an hour and 15 minutes. You know, it became an all-day journey, you know, teaching Sunday school, going to church, having a potluck afterwards, you know, and I don't get back until nighttime. So it really became too much. So my husband Bill started interpreting at a hearing church locally. There were no other churches, you know, for deaf churches for an hour around. And then some other deaf people started coming, some deaf, some Catholics, some Methodists. It was a Lutheran church. And the group got a little bit larger. And the hearing church asked us, what can we do to support you? And we asked them to pay for the interpreter. And the deaf then, actually afterwards, asked if they could actually get their own deaf ministry going. And so they got a deaf They got a pastor for it with a deaf minister who came twice a month. And then eventually we got a full-time pastor, and now we're actually separate from the hearing church. You know, so it was a very gradual process. You know, it grew, and now we have about 30 people per Sunday. And that's pretty good size for a deaf church congregation. We're not yet chartered. The pastor left, and so there's a vacancy. And I have been leading the church since last fall. But the hearing church has been extremely supportive, financially encouraging, letting us use space within the building, an office there, etc., etc. So there are lots of things like that that can be started with.
I just want to add about the listening devices. They do help me, but the problem that I have is that I'm listening, concentrating to make sure that I understand all the words. And when church is over, I'm exhausted, and I really didn't enjoy church that much. So with deaf services, I'm much more relaxed and enjoying myself and having a good spiritual inspiration. So that they do work, but it's a lot of work for the listener.
I used it down. I had to do that. I don't know what I want to say. I just want to make them stand up. Actually, my daughters attend church where I attended church growing up, and there have not been other deaf people that have attended that church. We've tried other churches that are our away that we've driven to, and what we found is that my daughters are better integrated with children their own age, even though they're learning sign language, than they are with 70, 80, 90 year old people who have very short tempers. And when my daughters twist and turn because they're bored, even though the older people are deaf, my daughters don't find that to be any more enjoying than going to their own church. Actually their own church more enjoying because there's kids their age that they can socialize and play with. And the kids are learning sign language, but to provide services for them, it meant my mother having to move up from first grade to second grade to third grade and be their teacher. And now where they're in fifth grade, they've had her for many, many, many years. And it would be nice for them to have other faces, and it would even be nicer if they could have a young adult that would be deaf come in and teach them. And I think that the way we're teaching, my mother's teaching the class right now, using visuals and flannelgraph boards and a lot of, if she's talking about something that relates with water, she'll bring water in. And that way, I think that the hearing kids, because the hearing kids actually benefit equally as much, because what we don't realize is that a higher percentage of us are visual learners. And to sit and listen to somebody, we go, and we start to fall asleep. And that means when we start to fall asleep, we stop processing. But if we watch it and we can take it in visually and hear it, we're going to retain it a lot longer. And it's going to keep our attention a lot longer, too.
Thank you.
It's not to say that interpretive service is bad, because it's needed. There's a lot of deaf and hard of hearing people have no place to go to. So we still need interpretive services, even though it may not be the best, but it's better than nothing.
From my work with the National Council of Churches, we have statistics. I'm not exactly sure where they were all pulled from. But there are about 27 million deaf or hard of hearing people in the United States. They say that about 90% of those people are not connected with any church. She was talking about young people. If you have a church in the same area, you may have one deaf child in this church, two in this church, two in that church. It doesn't matter their denomination. But it's nice if those churches could work together to do some sort of youth program, Sunday school class, summer camp, whatever. You know, the denomination needs to be ignored for certain circumstances.
Are there people who haven't spoken who would like to jump in, who have thoughts or questions or comments? Sure, sir.
Yeah, I've been watching and listening, and I'm concerned. My question is, are you literally translating, like I'm speaking, word for word, or is it, are you grouping things together and having keywords that the deaf person understands rather than every word I'm saying?
Well, as an interpreter, you sign the concept of what you're saying. You would not say that I have a run in my nylons and use the sign for running, physically running, and then nylon. You would show exactly what you're saying. And so interpreters don't omit the concept of what you're saying, but they might omit some of the word choices and use other signs that represent that concept.
Yeah.
So they're not altering what you're saying.
Yeah, the interpreter is using a different language to communicate the exact same concept that's, you know, spoken in English. You know, that it's really that simple. If you go to Russian church, you know, and there was a Russian interpreter, or a deaf church, whatever, you know, it would be the same kind of translation interpretation. You know, it'll never translate word for word because they are two different languages.
I have a question for Beth.
Wasn't waiting for that.
I have heard many times where they say that, I don't know, most deaf women marry hearing men. Have you heard of that? And they say most deaf men will marry deaf women. And I was just kind of curious, since you marry a hearing person, why didn't you look for a deaf man?
She also.
You said you were dating a hearing boy? Why not a deaf?
I do date deaf men, boys, also, but not. I don't like it because the hearing are more fun to be around socially. Sometimes they're kind of funny, you know, they make mistakes and all.
Well, I didn't marry him for because he's funny or anything.
I agree.
We dated, you know, and you know, I dated three different deaf, hard of hearing, hearing men, and you know, it's the communication match that's important. I've never noticed the statistics you talk about, but I do know that there's a high divorce rate between deaf and hard of hearing couples. Deaf and hearing couples, I'm sorry. Because oftentimes the hearing spouse,
right,
you know, whether it's a male or a female, doesn't pick up the language or the culture enough, and then there's just too much conflict and a divorce arises.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Anyone up in the balcony or?
Right.
Sure.
She says, I think a lot of the reasons why you see more and more cross-cultural marriages is because of the amount of mainstreaming that our schools have done and the laws that have opened up kids staying in their own district and not being as many of them sent to the deaf school. And so I know for my daughters, there was a one deaf boy in our whole school district, and they had nothing in common with them. And even when a hearing boy would look at them, they would get all flitter pattered and think that this is just wonderful, but they were never able to carry on
a conversation in depth, and it wasn't until moving to Vancouver School for the Deaf that when my one daughter, Amanda, made best friends with a boy. And they were in the same class together, and they had a lot in common. And she considers him as a best friend, and when he looks at her, she doesn't think that he's got a mad crush on her, because now she understands that the communication takes place there. And they can share things that they have in common and learn about each other's background. And I think that's why we see a lot of cross-cultural marriages that are taking place now versus before, when more kids were in the school for the deaf.
Yeah, I have a question.
Sure.
At one time, I thought it would be great if I learned sign language because I could communicate with anybody in the world rather than have to take different languages. I know that now that that's not true, but are there any similarities between ASL and other countries like Germany or England or whatever? Could you communicate with somebody from another country?
Well, we can communicate with other countries, deaf, etc., faster than you could communicate through voice with hearing farms, because there is a bonding, all over the world. There's a feeling of family. When we meet a deaf person, the gestural contact, and then there would be fast understanding of the basic sign language and the basic needs, water, bathroom, whatever. I went to Israel last fall, for example, and I met deaf Arabs and communicated with them fairly well. Not in-depth communication, but basic communication. There's a deaf Olympics in which people from countries all around the world, I think it's every 4 years, same as hearing Olympics, and the deaf communicate with each other.
I think also that there is so much importance in the ASL language put on body language and facial expression, and we don't do that a lot with our hearing language or our English language spoken. The point that we could get across to somebody in another country is that we're met by the tone of our voice, but often confused with badness. I know with my daughters will come in, and if we're real happy and we're talking and we're moving our body a lot between me and my husband, they will wonder if we're angry at each other and fighting when we're actually excited, because we don't show the differences in facial expression, but we show the body movement. And so with ASL, you have that facial expression, and when you're mad, your whole body tenses up and you express it with your body. So that's probably where people from foreign countries can communicate faster being deaf, because they probably use the same body language and the same facial expressions and subtle nuances as other countries.
Also, with deaf Vespers tonight in church, I was really worried that the play would go on and on and on for an hour, because people were starting to enjoy it too much. And it could go on and on and on, I know that it's preferred to be about 20 minutes, so. But it's natural for deaf people to, use their full bodies, facial expressions. Little things mean something. My nose movement, for example, that can mean something. The tongue slightly out of the mouth. Eyes raised, so everything has a meaning, especially on the face.
And when somebody had asked recently if it's difficult to learn the language, and he spoke up and said the basic isn't difficult, but it's that just shared with us that it's difficult to learn the body language and the facial expressions, mm-hmm. and that when your shoulders are up, you're questioning, and that's really the difficult part to learn. And that you learn from being around other deaf people.
Well, it's been about an hour, and so I want to honor the time commitment that we made. One thing I've learned this week is that for the deaf and hard of hearing folks, this is an exhausting week. And I imagine that they've had a tiring day, especially because of the Vespers that they've led and now this forum. But I hope that this conversation has shown some of the difficult places in trying to cross between hearing and deaf worlds and some of the wonderful gifts that can come out of efforts to do that. For me, I see a real gift in learning to pay more attention to body language and how important visual stuff is in worship. And I thank all of you for that tonight in the worship, and I think that I'll take that and continue to learn about that. So I hope that the conversation will continue and that we'll continue exploring this question.
Yeah, we want to all thank you all, especially Holden Village, for allowing a deaf and hard of hearing week. Very important. We do feel very included. We feel very free here to be ourselves. And we really appreciate that opportunity that we've had every year. This is our 16th year.
Wow. And I think that if we could just stay here just for maybe another year as one big community and family, that we could become like there was a community, and I'm not sure what year it was. Yeah, Martha's Vineyard was 16 or 1700s, where whether you were deaf or hearing, you signed. And when a foreigner came to the island and just spoke and didn't know sign language, they truly were the foreigner. Because I've seen people come up that are hearing that never even approached a deaf person before, and at this small community picked up their hands and signs, and little kids that were talking to mommy and daddy and saying, I wonder how you say this in sign language. And so I can see that as a community, it is possible to happen, to have a bye-bye and have those two cultures integrate.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, thanks to the panel and thanks to all of you for coming.
Sign, thank you. Sign, thank you.